Hi, everybody. I'm Chris Doritas from KCRW. Tonight, we're here with an artist whose vision continues to redefine music and culture. 14-time Grammy Award winner, Lady Gaga. Mayhem is her 7th consecutive number one album, a bold and deeply human work resonating with listeners around the world. With over 8.4 billion global streams, the album has sparked conversation, connection, and cultural impact on a global scale. Gaga wrote and produced every track on Mayhem, guiding its sound and emotional arc from start to finish. Songs like Abracadabra, with more than a billion global streams, and Die With a Smile, her chart-topping collaboration with Bruno Mars, speak to the album's reach and impact. Now, Die With a Smile spent 18 weeks at number one on the Billboard Global 200. It's one of the longest-running leaders in the chart's history and earned her a Grammy for Best Pop Duo Group Performance at the 2025 Awards. With her fearless approach to sound, storytelling, and performance, Gaga continues to push pop music into new territory. Every detail, from the music to the visuals to the live experience, rooted in her singular vision and artistry. Guests, it is my honor to welcome Lady Gaga.
How's everybody doing today? Happy Sunday.
Empty fight.
Thank you so much. This was the first song that I wrote for Mayhem, Vanish Into You. I wanted to sing it for you today. Thanks for coming out.
Okay. Wow. It was so cool to have you start this at the piano like that.
Coffee and glasses. That's how the piano should look.
Exactly. No, because were any of you at the show this week? Okay. I was at the show on Friday, and I don't know if you've said this every night, but one of the things that you said at the show, which it's just perfect that you started with the piano, because at some point you went to the piano and you said something like, and I'm paraphrasing, but something like, when you want to feel your authentic self, when you want to get rooted, you go to the piano. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that my authentic self, that piano in particular is really, really raw and exposed. It's like completely open, and you can see all the hammers and the strings inside. And like, I think it was really a metaphor for how I feel about my, you know, my musical soul. I started making music just at the piano as a child, and even being here today, this reminds me so much of like how I started, because I was in like small clubs playing at the piano. They'd have to tune it before I came. Yes. They're like, oh, she's coming.
Have you started playing piano at 4? Is that right?
Yeah, I was 4. I was four. We just had an upright in the house that belonged to my grandparents. And my mom and dad just put it there, and I just wanted to play it. So I used to play it kind of before I knew how to play it.
Finding your way on it. I when you hear like Abracadabra played at the piano, I mean, I guess any song, if you can play it on the piano or you can play it on a guitar in its simplest form, it's kind of a way to sort of, like a bullshit detector, like, do you have a good song, right?
That's an excellent way of putting it, actually.
It's a technical term.
Yeah, bullshit detector. Well, you know, I think that I've always found lots of different ways to write music, and I'm always inspired differently. Sometimes it starts at the piano, sometimes it starts with a melody in my head or a lyric idea or a song title, or especially in making electronic music too, it can be a synthesizer or it could be a beat that we make. So it's always different, but when you sit down at the piano and you play the song, to me, it has to move people, or it's not a great song. So both of these songs that I played you, they both started differently in the studio, but they all run through the piano.
Well, you started by saying that Vanish Into You was the first song that you, when you started playing that song, you said it was the first song you wrote for the album. I was gonna ask you, as the lead producer, the creative visionary, the architect of Mayhem, the new album, what was the initial catalyst? What was the first spark that said an album was coming to you?
There were sort of a few different things that happened. With that song in particular, it was a Moog synthesizer in the studio, and Andrew was like, Watt was playing in the other room, and I was...
So this was at Shangri-La?
No.
Oh.
We were at Dragonfly, and we were playing, and I was actually warming up my voice in the other room, and I could hear the Moog sound, and I ran in and I said, I need you to stop because I have an idea, but I won't be able to finish it, and I have to warm up my voice. So I need you to stop, but remember what you just did. And then I warmed up my voice, and then I went back in, and I wrote Vanish Into You. But the other like major change in my life that also brought this album about was that my environment completely changed, and I met Michael, my partner, and I've been around a lot of creative people in my career, but I would say that I also became famous when I was really young. And, you know, it was also at times a very kind of shallow environment, and fame culture was really challenging for me. So falling in love with somebody that's as creative and imaginative as him made the household all about artistry. And it really allowed me to go back to who I really am. And the pressure was never on me to be anything other than like my true self. And, you know, that really made me want to make a record too, being me again.
So that solid foundation at the house allowed you to kind of, I don't know, feel safe, I suppose, and to diving back into your...
I think we all need to feel safe to like access who we really are. And I can't tell you how much this album, and with its chaotic title, Mayhem, I feel like it is sort of acknowledging all that happened before it. And the calm, there was a lot of calm though, and quiet that had to come for me to make it.
I feel like that's something that comes with age though, because I think when artists are younger, they tend to be like, I have to be high, I have to be unhappy, I have to be going through torture, I have to torture myself, right? That comes with maturity, I suppose, as an artist, doesn't it?
I don't know. For me, it did. For me, you know, I've like done so much, I've seen so much, and I went through such a long phase of like self-torture and like, you know, the suffering artist. And I think in a lot of ways, Lady Gaga as a persona and construct is an embodiment of that suffering and having a dual identity, because I really do have two identities. I really am Stephanie and I really am Lady Gaga. So, yeah, I think that many artists go through this, and I feel really lucky that I got to get through it. And now, so much of the show that you saw this week, like it's, you know, it's in an opera house. An opera house to me is an expression of dignity, and I think I found my dignity as a woman, and that's what that show is meant to represent, is me finding it and all of the personal chaos that I went through to get there.
I think one of the things that I think is so great about you, one of the things I really love about you, is that you are able to be Stephanie and be Lady Gaga so authentically, you know? Watching 5'2", watching the documentary and seeing your family and seeing how you interact with your grandmother and your dad and your mom and all that. And like, the Stephanie side of you is so solid, it seems. And being able to hold on to that is gotta be such a gift for you, that you have that to go back to.
I need
to stabilize
that.
You.
Yeah, right? It's so precious, because your humanness is what makes you a good songwriter. And you like can't create if you don't have your humanity. And I think one of the most profound artists of my whole life was Bruce Springsteen. And actually the relationship my father had with his music. My dad was from Jersey, and Bruce was always sharing of himself in his performances, and his songs were about his life. And it seems so easy to look at that and say, like, if he didn't have himself in a real way, how could he have made that music? And I think I just had to go through that kind of process and ultimately find for myself that, like, returning to the sort of basics of who you are. Like, I love to practice piano, I love to practice singing, I love to practice guitar, I love to write, and like returning to that kind of like ritual and of discipline was what mattered the most.
Well, I mean, that said, it seems like you still have to have some kind of, well, when you're coming in to make Mayhem and you're writing these songs, you've said something about Mayhem, and I hope I get this right, about how you know that the artistic direction of this album was influenced by the anxiety that goes into the room with you when you're making music.
There's an anxiety that I definitely feel while I'm writing, because I can hear what I want, but I have to get it out, and I have to I've got to explain the guitar part and the bass line, and I've got to make sure that the lyrics like really hit in the right way and get the melody just perfect. And and it comes to me pretty quickly. So it's wonderful, you know, working in the studio with Andrew and Circuit and Gustafelstein and Michael and Bruno. Like, you just, when people are excellent at music, they can move quickly and they can interpret, and they're capturing your soul with you, which is why it's such a blessing when you have collaboration with people that, like, really listen to you also, and they're not trying to create you. I value that tremendously. And that was a huge part of Mayhem. That's why Mayhem sounds like me, because it is me. And this was the way that I made music in the very beginning. All these influences, all of these references, they're like memories. I think the way we all have with music, it's like so powerful when music works its way into you, beyond just like a conversation at dinner. It's like part of who you are. This was a anxiety, yes, inducing process, but also very fun and very beautiful. But Mayhem kind of, as a title, encapsulates all those things.
The push and pull of the inner demons coming to...
Yeah, and like, you know, my unique battle with becoming someone else when I was 19 years old, and then sort of finding my way through life with that. I did think a lot about how to express that in a way that would resonate with people, so that it wouldn't just be about me. It would be also, you know, what is the persona that you create? What is the other side of you that you're at war with? I think we all do that. I think mine's just, I don't know, theatrical.
Well, you are a theater kid at heart, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I am.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I was a sort of like cast aside theater kid, because I was like a little too pop. So, and then in pop music, I'm a little too theater. So it's, you know, I don't really fit anywhere.
Well, during the making of the record, you mentioned Andrew Watt, one of the co-producers, you mentioned Circuit. At what point do you start to let other people into the room for your creative process? I mean, you have access to anybody in the world, you know, mm-hmm. with so many options at your fingertips. How do you keep the noise out so you can zero in on who's right to bring this album to fruition?
I think I've done this with other albums before. I definitely did it with Mayhem. I didn't really include a lot of people. It was Michael, it was Circuit, it was Andrew, it was Gustafelstein, it was Bruno, Michael's mom. She was in the studio a lot. But it was, when you are trying to create a singular vision, I think you have to curate whose like sonic taste is right for the project, and you are following something that is uniquely created by all of you. And then I didn't invite like the label in until I was completely finished with the album. And I really didn't play it for many people until it was done. It was us as a collective that made it, and it was our input and our vision. And I think that that's really, it depends on what kind of record you're making, but I think when you're trying to push things in pop music, like, you kind of have to have a target that you're trying to hit, and you have to understand each other and build kind of like a creative intimacy. And so, it might sound narrow, but I like to work that way, because then if too many people get involved, to me, you can get off of what you were trying to make, or someone might put an idea into your head that is not really indicative of what you're trying to say. And, you know, you can get self-conscious while you make music. You can get in your head about what's in. I hate like that feeling of like being not able to hear. It's like all of a sudden all I can hear is somebody's notes. I can't hear the song. So I really try to just keep it pure.
Well, I was going to ask you who was the first in the room, but I guess it was Michael, right? for the process of the album? I mean,
it was Michael and then and Andrew. Andrew was he came to the house and I had, you know, started working. We had started writing songs and we just, I don't know, it was like really organic and natural. And then that song came and it was really powerful.
Vanish Into You.
Yeah. Yeah. And that like really, you know, kind of like blew it all open. That like, because it was a style of writing that I hadn't even done in a very long time. And it had a kind of confidence in it that I had lost. And, you know, I can hear that. I don't know if everyone can hear that in each other's work, but I can hear my lack of confidence on certain things, or I can see the ways in which I have dressed up my music to explore something that, you know, interesting, maybe if I was feeling self-conscious. But I had a kind of determination and a comfort with being dark in the music, and that was really fun.
Well, I was going to ask you, I would think it's important when you're embarking on a new project to be pushed out of your comfort zone, right? That's often the role of a co-producer or another collaborator of some kind. Were there moments in this process where you felt pushed, or maybe I should say cajoled, out of your comfort zone?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually quite good at making myself uncomfortable. So, you know,
You push yourself out of your comfort zone.
I push myself out of my comfort zone. I go like, what if I did it this interval differently? What if I did it that way? Let's try it again. And vocally, when I made this record, vocally, I really pushed myself in a very different way. Because the music is a hybrid of so many different genres and influences that there's not one way to sing it, and there's not really one pop way to sing it. So I sang some of these songs just to death in the studio over and over, manipulating my voice until I found like the most compelling way to tell this story. And that puts you outside of your comfort zone because you do a take and then I would listen back and then I'd do it again. And it's sort of like you have to be strong through that process because you're criticizing yourself. And it's hard, I think, with repetition in the studio of, you know, playing a part over and over or singing over and over to make sure that it still has feeling. You have to capture the feeling. So you can't rehearse it to death that it loses all the feeling. You have to be willing to let it be natural.
How long was the process from the beginning of the making of the album to the finishing? How long was that process?
I think it was like at least 7 months, I think. I don't remember exactly. I really just like went into a hole. But it was several months.
I mentioned at the top, I mentioned Shangri-La because I guess
this we were there a lot.
You were there a lot, mm-hmm. And it was close to home.
Yeah, we went there.
Right. I wonder if being close to home was, you know, helpful to you because you could go home and you could kind of be normal at night.
Well, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty normal in the studio.
I love that.
I am. I mean, well, because you got to have all your faculties with you, you know. And but yeah, it was great to like roll out of bed and run on over and. You know, Andrew would sleep really late, so I would be like really excited to go in earlier, but then we'd get there around 2 o'clock and yeah, we would work and work and work and then I would go home. But we still worked when we were home, you know, it was kind of like just never really stopped because we would get home and have more ideas and we have instruments in the house and so.
How do you keep your ideas when you're like, I don't know, you know, going through your day, you're away from the studio. Do you keep them in a notebook? Do you keep them in a...
Voice notes, you know, regular notes, writing out lyrics, sometimes in a notebook, sometimes a napkin. Whatever's available.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. One of the things you said at the show as well, you said this to the audience, you thanked them so much for believing in you for so long. And then you said something, again, I'm paraphrasing, like you've taught me so much talking to your fans. And I was curious what you've learned from your fans over the years.
Well, my fans are pretty tough. And, you know, everyone has a different story, but a lot of what I think has always bonded them together is that they felt different and not always accepted. And that sense of community and the importance of community through music was extremely profound in my life. I mean, my fans looked like my friends. And, you know, I think also in such a profound way, the queer community taught me that you can not give up on what you believe in. And, you know, I definitely did give up at one point. But I think through the power of knowing the fans were there for me if I came back, that I could keep going. And I say this a lot recently, but I really do feel like all we can do is our best and put like one foot in front of the other and just do the best we can. And my fans really have modeled a kind of like dignity and triumph for me that is very special. It's very, very special.
I'm guessing the experience that you've had with your fan base, which is a rabid fan base, they're incredible, has resulted in you writing songs that were directly impacted by your relationship with your fans. Can you think of an example of that?
Like Born This Way?
On this new album?
On this new album.
I think of Abracadabra, and I don't know if that's... If I'm on to something here, but...
No, I... You know when you have, like, really close friends that you can sort of speak in code, you know, and they, like, know what you're saying, but no one else does? I feel like I try to do that with the music, and I did that, I think, on the whole record in a way.
Little Easter eggs for your friends?
Not just Easter eggs, but, like... for me, it might be more nuanced, like, interval choices of melody... And certain vowel sounds for hooks and songs that are, you know, seemingly don't have real words in them. Like these are things that define us, and so, meaning me and my fans. And I think for me and Little Monsters, it's sort of like saying, like, we're still here. It's like a bat signal, you know? But through music. And it's not always like completely literal. It's more like a feeling.
I guess I was off track though. I was thinking of that line in Abracadabra, don't waste time on a feeling, use your passion, no return. One of my favorite lines. I don't know if you guys caught that in the piano version there, but and then you reference a poem.
Like a poem said.
Like a poem said by a lady in red, you hear the last few words of your life with a haunting dance, now you're both in a trance. It's time to cast your spell on the night. Is there an actual poem you're referencing there?
The poem is Abracadabra. Amor unana, abracadabra, morta ugaga. It's a spell. And this like witch in the club is casting her spell on all the people that are there. But what I ultimately realized making the video that the witch was me.
So the lady in red is you.
I am the lady in red. I am both. So it's a fatal evening. Yeah, that I was inspired by this idea. I don't know if anyone can relate to this, but when I first had an experience with music in a nightclub, it was like completely entrancing. And I remember feeling so alive and so free, but also it was like a dangerous feeling because I just wanted to like get crazy. Music just made me, Jeff Koons said, that we like bonded over this once, that like this like wild feeling that art would make you have. So I think that that song in a way is about that feeling. And if you can survive it, and can survive yourself.
Talking about the tour a little more, the Mayhem Ball, live artistry is just so important in everything that you do. And I wonder if the touring aspect is actually in the DNA during the songwriting process. When you're writing a song, are you thinking to yours? I mean, obviously it has to move you emotionally, but do you think about when you're in production, how it will be received?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I've talked a little bit about gothic dreams, which is something that I've always had when making music. I sort of have these like visions. Some of it is color, and some of it is just like almost scenes, theatrical scenes. So I take that with me when I create the show, and then I build off of it. And we have like creative workshops when we're working. You know, we work at home, we work in the dance studio, and we explore it. Even like sometimes freestyling singing or freestyling dance or experimenting with costume. These sorts of things have like an interesting interplay, but when you don't have the pressure of the audience, you can kind of like see where it takes you. It's almost like improvisation, like a workshop. And then we push it as far as we can, I guess.
When the first show for the Mayhem Ball was Coachella, right? Shortly after that, you played a show in Rio on the beach, Copacabana. And I don't know if you guys know this, there was 2.5 million people showed up for this show, a free event on the beach in Rio. Was there a point where, I don't know, your manager came, somebody came to you and was like, there's a couple million people out there?
Well, Michael told me right before I went on stage, and I didn't know it was that many people. And he goes, when you get out there, it'll be the largest audience for a woman in all of history.
In the history of the world, anywhere in the world.
I didn't know. I didn't know, and I was like in my little red costume. Okay. Nothing could have prepared me for that moment. I'm really glad that he told me because it really took my breath away. You can't imagine seeing that many people in one place. It's unnatural. And it was really special. And what a fun show, and in a beautiful place with fans that I love so much. And like the feel, and every country you go to, the community feeling is there, but it's different because it's in that unique culture. And then, you know, I'm like a emotional DJ on stage. I gotta like figure out how everybody's feeling, and I gotta whoop them into shape to put their hands up and dance. And it was really something I'll never forget.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cultural phenomenon.
It was amazing. It was, and you have to like, you really have to have a chat with yourself, because if you internalize too much what's going on, you'll forget to feel what the songs are about. And it's, you know, so you have to like ground, like I'm a storyteller and I have to tell this story now. But you sort of combine it with, you know, the energy on the beach that night.
On the beach in Rio. I'm so in awe of what you've been able to accomplish over all these years.
Thank you so much.
And it's such a pleasure to sit here with you and talk about Mayhem.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. I really appreciate you all coming. Yeah. We had 4 sold-out shows this week, which was really fun.
Yeah.
And a surprise. It was like the audience was... I've never had an audience like that in Los Angeles before. It was really special, and it was almost sad when the show was over last night.
And now you're off to Seattle, you finish up in the US, and then you go off to the UK and Europe, and then it's Australia, and then you finish top of the new year with dates in Osaka and Tokyo, at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
Wishing you the best. We'll see you down the road.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Lady Gaga.
Thank you, thank you.